Welcome to On The Box, the Geek Show's weirdly wonderful TV-themed podcast.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Weirdly wonderful.
Yes. He was Andrew. My name is Rob. No. Yes. He was
Andy. I still am.
Yeah. He was still, Andy.
I'm still Andy.
He was Andy. My name is Rob.
And I am ill. So very, very ill.
Yes.
Okay, ill.
Yes. Yes, he is. He is ill. So it's mainly going to be me and Andy today, with the odd chiming in from Andrew over in left field.
Yeah, only if I have some meaningful insight or a joke about poop I can make.
Yes, and Andrew's just on commentary for a day.
Yes, thank God for the poop deck. It's a reference joke. Anyway, yes.
In-jokes.
Yes, in-jokes. In-jokes are good. If you want to know what the in-joke is about, listen to the other shows on our podcast network. Anyway, we're going to start off with a bit of interesting news. Tales from the Crypt is coming back. TNT have officially greenlighted a new Tales from the Crypt, and it's going to be getting 10 episodes with a newly reinvented Crypt Keeper, and it's going to anchor the channel's upcoming 2017 horror block, curated by M. Night Shyamalan.
Shalamalama-ding-dong.
Yes. Yes, M. Night Shyamalan.
See, that's the kind of deep insight I'm saving my voice for.
Yes. Anyway, they have also announced a pilot order for the anthology series Time of Death, which Shyamalan is going to be the executive producer of, and it's also developing a project called Creatures. It's based, this terror-filled programming block is slated to debut next year, and it seems like they're doing this as kind of well, you know, sci-fi used to do interesting horror stuff as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it kind of went off the rails and started doing their own thing when they changed their name to Siffy.
Yeah, fell in with a bad crowd.
Yeah.
That Sharknado lot.
Yeah, and then Horror Channel picked it up and ran with it for a little bit, and then they kind of put it to one side and went with, and decided to do reruns of Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, and Xena.
Prefer, I think that's like all Horror Channel can afford to do, though.
Is it just me, though, or have they just swapped? Like, is horror doing more science fiction stuff and sci-fi doing more horror stuff?
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, it really is weird.
It really is weird, because Andy has a valid point there. They are doing more sci-fi stuff and horror doing more sci-fi stuff and sci-fi doing more horror stuff. So maybe TNT has seen a gap in the market.
Although I like that we've realised this, like, minutes after chastising other Rob for trying to combine horror and sci-fi. Like, no, Rob, they're two very different genres.
Obviously not as different as we thought.
You do have some things that are sci-fi horror.
The Thing.
Yep, that is a thing that's sci-fi
anything
horror.
With the supernatural element
is not
science
sci-fi.
Fiction, in a sense.
Well, not really, because if it's supernatural, then it's more fantasy.
Yeah,
you're dealing
like
with spirits.
The exact opposite of sci-fi.
Yeah. Sci-fi is science.
Mm-hmm.
Science fiction. The clue is in the title.
Yeah, but if you have a, let's just say, a TV show or a film set on a different planet, right? You're seeing that term of planet, which is science. So technically, it is science fiction.
Well, see, that's actually something I've thought a lot about.
Yeah?
Because I've decided Star Wars is actually probably fantasy.
Yeah, it is.
Because, like, for it to be science fiction, it has to be about the science.
Yeah, and it's not. It's about the Force.
Yeah, it's basically just magic with a different name.
Yep. And yes, they have blasters and stuff like that. If you're going to put it in any kind of genre, maybe science fantasy?
Yeah, that can be, like, a new combined genre. Yeah.
Sci-fi. Oh, Sci-fi.
Yes.
Like cipher.
Yes. So, science fantasy, there you go. We have a new genre.
We're trademarking.
We didn't kind of steal that from somebody else. We came up with it on our own, like good intelligent kids that we are.
And we can own the copyright as well, because we'll spell it S-C-I-F-A-R, not S-Y-F-A-R.
C-F-A-R. I C-far. Can't. That's why I wear glasses.
Anyway.
I'm here all week.
Unfortunately.
Anyway. M. Night Shyamalan.
I love the way Andy keeps trying to pronounce the surname.
I've only done it once.
You've tried to pronounce his surname in the past.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, I remember those times with fondness.
It's an M. Night, complicated name.
Anyway, yes. Tales from the Crypt. It's coming back. And I don't know. I really enjoyed the original Tales from the Crypt, but it's kind of aged horribly.
Yeah, it's very 90s, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is very, very 90s. And I'm not sure whether Tales from the Crypt and The Crypt Keeper is something that could work now. I'm hopeful that it does.
I feel like a horror anthology series is definitely something that can work.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got American Horror Story.
I was going to say American Horror Story kind of proves that it can work.
And something that can do something like that, but like on an episode-to-episode basis, could be interesting.
Yeah, it's just with the format that Tales from the Crypt had, where you had the Crypt Keeper at the beginning introducing the story.
I was going to say that's the problem. In that is just super cheesy.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be hard if you want to do like a serious horror story with that very, very cheesy opening. How are you going to reconcile the two?
See, an interesting thing would have been if they basically got rid of the Crypt Keeper in its old form and had the Crypt Keeper as... who was it who played Candyman?
Oh, Tony Todd.
Have him as the Crypt Keeper.
Oh my God, not even just have him as Tony Todd. I don't want to believe this is what Tony Todd does on his days off.
Just have him. Because you remember in Final Destination, he was playing the guy in the morgue, right? And he was great in that role as well. But have him in kind of the role of the Crypt Keeper. But he appears at the end of the episode with the kind of moral of the story. And he could just be sitting in a cafe somewhere at the end, and the camera will be like on the ending shot of maybe the happy couple walking out the door after surviving their ordeal. And then he just pans to the left, and there he is just reading the paper, and he just looks at the camera, gives like a one-line ending, because he is the Crypt Keeper, and have him as like the running theme throughout all the episodes.
Yeah, I could see that working. I think the idea of like maybe completely doing away with like an actual person who's the Crypt Keeper and make it maybe more like the VHS films.
Yeah. Actually, that one would work as well. That one would work really well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have ideas. Come and ask for our ideas. We copyright these ideas.
Yes, please pay us money for these ideas.
Yes, you're not allowed to steal.
Just give us money. Yes, just give us any money.
You're not allowed to steal our ideas. Yes, we have ideas. We have all the best ideas. Except for my idea this morning about wearing these trainers.
No, that was a small loan of $1 million type idea.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to keeping the kind of supernatural horror type theme-ish type thing. Stephen King's The Mist, that novella that he wrote that turned into a movie that was actually pretty good, is actually getting a 10-episode TV series. And each episode is going to be about an hour long. And it goes into production this summer, and it's slated to debut in 2017. Spike TV have basically ordered a pilot for The Mist, which is due for February. But after hearing the pitch for the full series, they basically said, okay, screw the pilot. We're going to have a full series. So they've ordered the full series before the pilot's even been made.
Well, that's an encouraging sign.
Must be some script that they've, well, what they've seen. It must be really promising for them to do that.
It does look really promising. It means that they've got a lot of hope for it. I mean, the movie did pretty well. The movie did pretty good.
Yeah.
It's just some people didn't really feel comfortable with the ending.
Yeah, see, I didn't like the film that much.
Mm.
Like, it's especially the ending. It's basically in the ending, some things happen.
And other things happen.
Yes. And it's all very conveniently timed.
Yes, it is. It's a bit too convenient for my liking.
Yeah, and that's my main problem. And also, I think the film hasn't aged that well, because it wasn't that long ago that I saw it.
Yeah.
And the CGI looks very shonky in it now.
Yeah. I think part of that is because CGI technology is advancing really, really quickly. So what might have looked really good then is not looking so good now. I mean, if you look at the original Toy Story...
Yeah, that is showing a bit of wear. But I think it's good that they're taking something like this, where it's got a good idea.
Yeah.
But maybe time hasn't been massively kind to it. You're fixing it up. This is what reboots should be doing.
Yeah, I agree. This is what reboots should be doing. And it's interesting that the reboot is actually a TV reboot rather than a straight-up movie reboot. Because we're getting inundated more and more with reboots of old things. Reboots of things that are only a couple of years old.
Yeah, I mean, I still think like the most egregious example is the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yeah. And the two-year gap between...
Yeah, yeah, it was like a two-year gap between them bringing out, like, the Swedish version, then deciding, no, we can't expect people to read subtitles.
Well, I mean, look at Let the Right One In.
Yeah, that's another one.
And which then became Let Me In and was not very good.
And there was Death at a Funeral as well.
Yeah.
They did the British version, and then it was literally something like 2 years later, 2 or 3 years later, maybe.
Oh, was that Four Weddings at a Funeral? Four Weddings at a Funeral?
Death at a Funeral.
Death at a Funeral.
The original had I forgot his name, from My Family Nick.
Yeah, I know the one you're about. Yeah.
It was Chris British Marshall. Humour, where it's not meant to be funny, but it is.
Yeah.
So to speak.
It's kind of that really dark humour that we do so well.
Mm. And the American version was as American as you could get. It was Chris Rock, wasn't it?
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was like Chris Rock and Tracy Morgan, wasn't it?
It was the exact same story. And I still had, I forgot his name, Little Man.
Little Man.
We can't help you with the name of your little man.
Do you want to play Tyrion? Do you want to play
Tyrion? Oh, Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage, yeah. In both of them.
Is that what you call him? Game of Thrones, indeed.
Oh, we've got another fan letter for you, Mr. Little Man.
So he calls Peter Dinklage Little Man. He calls his little man Peter Dinklage. Oh, anyway, where's the innuendo bingo when you need it? Anyway, so I'm happy about this. Anyway, right, moving on to Game of Thrones. It's because we mentioned Game of Thrones, so we have a segue there.
Yes, we do.
Yes. The creators are thinking about shorter final seasons for Game of Thrones. So you're going to say...
It's short enough.
Yeah, it's already... 10 episodes a season.
Well, it's about 10 to 13 episodes a season, but they're thinking of dropping it down to 7 episodes for season 7, 6 for the 8th series, which is potentially the final series as well. So, you know, it's 13 episodes once the 6th season is over. You know, 6th season is 13 episodes and then maybe half that almost for 7 and 8. It feels like they've got enough to basically do series 7 and have it end there. But you know how they did with the final Harry Potter book?
Yeah, they want to split it up more.
Otherwise, why would you do 7 episodes for Series 7 and 6 episodes for Series 8? A total of which is 13.
Mm. Yeah, because I was going to say, they've got like such a huge cast, it seems insane if they want to do like full seasons, but it reduced episodes.
But Game of Thrones is a massive cash cow. We must milk it.
You could easily do similar to what Walking Dead does and just have a mid-season finale and have more episodes, couldn't you?
I don't think it'd work with Game of Thrones. I think that if you start adding in lots and lots of filler, you'll kind of destroy the momentum of the storyline. Because the storyline picks up and picks up and picks up and then just carries on at a fairly rapid pace.
You know,
just from one season to the next until it gets to that big climax at the end.
Well, plus, if you like Game of Thrones... is it's all about people making these very complicated plans with every step meticulously planned out.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really fit itself well to just random filler arcs.
Yeah, if you suddenly throw in something like, let's all go to the seaside, that particular episode, you know, with dragons playing around in the surf and stuff like that, and what is it, Daenerys Targaryen and Peter Dinklage...
Actually, you say that if there was like an episode of just like Tyrion and Bronn like stealing a galleon full of wine and money and just going off to the beach, I would watch that episode.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was saying. We'd watch the episode. It'd destroy any momentum of the story, though. But we'd still happily watch it.
And of course, the obligatory volleyball game.
Yes, the obligatory volleyball game, which Peter Dinklage would umpire.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say on that. So, yeah, shorter seasons for Game of Thrones. What do you guys think? Good idea? Bad idea?
I think if they've got them planned, for example, what they're going to, like, solid plan, I think that'll be better than spreading it out. But I don't see why they don't just put them together into one final season and split them in two and just call it the same season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does seem a bit pointless, but... Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
At least you know it's ending, in a sense.
It's, well, they reckon it might be the end at the 8th season, but who knows? I mean, if it makes more money and it's already made all of the money. It has all the best money.
You know you've got that spin-off title coming, whenever that happens.
What, Show Me the Money?
I know we say that, though. I mean, Breaking Bad made, like, all the money ever.
Yeah.
But they still ended it when the writer said, no, I want to end it at season 5. And they respected that, so.
And then they came out with Better Call Saul.
That's true.
So they ended Breaking Bad, but they continued in that world. And I think that might be an interesting avenue for them to pursue.
Yeah, I would definitely prefer that than them just trying to stretch out Game of Thrones way past when it should have ended.
Yeah, I think that's a much better avenue to pursue is finish Game of Thrones, finish it properly, but then maybe explore that world a bit more.
Yeah, because it is a very rich world.
Yeah, and it's ripe for exploration. So maybe that's an avenue they'll pursue. We'll see.
Yeah, although I did hear, like, one of the writers said a very filthy lie as well in the news.
Oh?
He had the gall to even try and suggest that Cyrio Farrell is really dead.
Okay.
Which is, because everyone knows Cyrio Farrell is really alive. Because he's the best swordsman ever. And he says to death, not today.
Yes.
And I don't care that he only had a wooden sword and he was facing down like an army of guards. He survived, goddammit. He survived.
I'm not saying a word. I'm just waiting for Andrew to finish his passionate plea.
You can't say he died, writers of Game of Thrones. You're wrong. Maisie Williams agrees with me as well.
This is true. She liked him as well.
She did.
Yes. But then she went on after that to betray the Doctor and get rid of that annoying whatever her name was. What was her name?
Yeah, Clara.
Clara, yeah, get rid of Clara.
See, that's why Maisie Williams is great.
Yes. She's an assassin, I tell you.
Because she was trained by Cyrio Farrell,
yes.
Who's alive.
We're going a bit meta here, so let's bring it back with Marvel. The showrunner for the new Luke Cage TV series, Chiyohei Coker, has said that particular show is going to be like Marvel's version of The Wire. What do you guys think of this? Because The Wire is, like, it's crazy famous.
Yeah, I mean, it's only, it's ambitious.
Yeah, it's very ambitious. Andy?
I've never watched The Wire.
You didn't watch The Wire. Basically, The Wire was like, it was kind of a crime drama, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was basically like set in Baltimore about like the gangsters and the police working there.
Yeah.
And how everything is miserable and full of drugs.
Yep. And that kind of fits with Luke Cage working around the area that he's in.
Because that is the sort of world he lives in.
Well, that's Hell's Kitchen, isn't it? So,
actually, no, I'm not sure. He's more Harlem-based.
He's more Harlem-based. Actually, yeah, he's more Harlem-based, but he does venture into Hell's Kitchen quite a lot because there is all that crossover.
Yeah, they do. He takes visits to Hell's Kitchen from time to time.
Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about them making that claim because The Wire was a very good TV series, but I mean, if they do manage to pull it off, then it's going to be a very interesting angle.
Yeah, but I can see what they mean in terms of the style being similar.
Yeah.
But that is setting your sights very high. And I say that, like, as a huge fan of Marvel's TV shows.
Yeah. I really love what they've done with Daredevil. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think that Daredevil is amazing. What the angle they've taken with Daredevil is great. I much prefer Daredevil to the angle they've taken with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Absolutely adore Jessica Jones. I thought that was really, really brave going down that route.
That's why, like, I think they might have the potential to hit that.
Yeah.
I'm also worried
Agent
gonna,
Carter,
yeah.
On your recommendation, Agent Carter is phenomenal.
Although I assume you've seen series one.
Yes.
Because I might have to have a little chat about season two today.
Oh, okay. Ooh. I haven't seen season two yet. I've seen season one, and season one is great. It's amazing. I love Agent Carter season one. So, yeah, I'm just kind of...
Going to have to non-spoilery.
The thing is, I'm hopeful that they can hit the mark because they've been really ticking boxes really well with me for the TV stuff, except for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but we don't talk about them. They're like the weird cousins that that come and visit once a year.
They don't exist.
No, they're the weird cousins that visit once a year.
That don't get invited to the family reunions.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's that weird cousin Cletus who, you know, keeps dead ferrets.
I've seen a little bit of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I'm, oh no.
Yeah, it's
not a good show.
No, it's not. Anyway, shall we have the final story?
We shall have the final story.
And I kept this one till last on purpose. So,
oh, no.
In the beginning, there was a children's character called Noddy, right? And Noddy, in the beginning, had a friend called Big Ears, who you can't actually call Big Ears now. He also had a friend who was of African-American descent, who had a name beginning with G, and you can't call him that now.
Oh, no, I remember him.
Yeah. You can't call him that now.
I'm starting to think my nostalgia for the Noddy franchise might have been slightly misplaced.
Yeah. Yes, you can't call him that now as well. And Noddy has been through several different iterations, but now Noddy has relocated from a house for one in Toyland to a flat in Dalston. If you go by his new look, because he no longer has the white face and rosy cheeks and the cute little button nose, that is gone from Noddy. He also doesn't have the handkerchief tied around his neck. You know, the yellow handkerchief with the red with the red polka dots on it? That is no longer a thing. Now Noddy is sporting a beanie with a little tuft of hair coming out the front, like some kind of weird anime character or hipster, and a roll neck sweater.
So disturbing, you even disturbed Robber.
So Noddy is now... and I forgot the beanie has a bell on top.
Because of course the beanie has a bell on top.
So now Noddy is officially a hipster.
Yes, he is a filthy, dirty, like, 8-year-old hipster.
Yep.
He's probably going to have a rap album anytime soon.
We don't know.
But it's not... It's not Noddy.
No, no.
Although you can see him stood on the street corner going, give me all your money, Big Ears, couldn't you?
Yeah. But...
No, I think Big Ears is the muscle in his organisation.
Thing is, this is going to be on Channel 5's Milkshake time slot, which is like for younger kids. And this is Noddy Toyland Detective. And it's being made by DreamWorks. And... here's the worst bit. He's got smart shoes and he also solves crimes with a tablet. And I'm really, really worried about any upcoming Noddy Teletubbies crossover if he's solving crimes with the tablet.
Oh, no.
Things are going to get a bit too intimate.
Yes. And is this going to be like, you know those pulp 1920s private detective novels? So Noddy's just in his office with the little dog. He's got his feet on the desk and his jingle beanie on. And then, of all the offices to walk into, they had to walk into mine. And you just got the Teletubbies walking in. Someone's stolen Tinky Winky's tablet, a stomach tablet. So he has to find it.
Where did Noddy get his tablet from?
Wasn't Tinky Winky the one with the bag?
I don't care. So, yeah. His trusty friend... Oh, you are allowed to call him Big Ears now again, then. So his trusty friends Big Ears and Bumpy, as well as his car, will join Noddy as he solves mysteries. And the lead role... This is genius. The lead role is going to be voiced by newcomer Louis Ashbourne Circus, the son of Gollum.
Son of Andy Circus.
Son of Andy Circus.
<I've got them.
laughs> So he's starting him off with Noddy, and he's going to work his way up to Gollum, and then he's going to work his way up even further to be the new Caesar.
Oh my God, I've just...
He's training his heir to the throne.
No, but even better than that... Together, they are circus folk.
I don't know why I'm laughing at that. The last time I tried making a circus joke with Andy Circus, someone told me off, Rob. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah. That's
what Noddy looks like. He looks like one of those, like, disreputable backhands who works in, like, circus construction.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. The carny folk, isn't he? He's carny folk. That's what he looks like.
This is carny folk, Noddy.
Is this something you're going to be watching?
No.
No.
Well, number one, the time slot is the Milkshake time slot, which is for younger kids on Channel 5. And usually during the weekday, at that time, I'm in a rush getting ready to come to the office and the studio, or I'm asleep because it's too early.
Well, you want to set your series link on it to see what Noddy, what crimes Noddy has to solve.
The crime of waking me up too early in the morning.
Uh-oh, Noddy, looks like there's been another murder in Thailand.
Yes. No, there will be. Who is the culprit? Well, it's kind of obvious when I'm holding a bloody alarm clock.
Isn't he only a few people that live in Thailand, though? From the original series, there was only the recurring characters that
you
see.
Oh, my God, it's worse than Midsummer.
Thailand, population 4.
3. 2.
Didn't live for Noddy. He did it.
When Noddy's the only one left alive, the culprit is pretty easy to figure out. Anyway, right, so that was the news. We're going to leave that to one side. We're going to move on to having a break first, and then we'll be back with what we've been watching. So stay there.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
And welcome back to On The Box. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been watching. So guys, what have you been watching?
I'm going to go first then. So I was going to mention this one last week because I was torn, but I'm going to mention it this week because it's worth talking about. I watched the BBC's ongoing documentary series, Inside Obama's White House. It's really actually quite a fascinating look at the inner workings of the American political system. Now, you guys know how much I really love to hate, to love, to hate, to love, to talk about politics. Because it's kind of a love-hate relationship between me and politics. We can't stand each other, but we can't be apart. And the American...
Like the romantic drama of the decade.
Yes. And the American political system is basically... It's a joke. Seriously. The whole idea of the two-party system is a nonsense. But the Americans believe in it, and they believe in it so passionately, it's kind of cute. When you think about it, because it's like, you know how kids believe in Santa Claus?
Yeah, it's like that.
Their idea of democracy is like kids believing in Santa Claus. You just go, oh, isn't it so cute that you actually have this kind of hope? And that's why we end up with people like Donald Trump, who are like a gorilla in a blonde wig. And still not sure what he is. Don't think he's human. But don't quote me on that, because I can't prove it yet. But anyway... Inside Obama's White House, and it's an ongoing series that's detailing the rise of Obama from when he was a lawyer and to when he became a candidate for the presidency, to when he won the presidency, won re-election, went all the way through. And it jumps around in time a little bit, and it deals, rather than dealing consecutively with Obama's residency as president... Oh, sorry. Rather than dealing consecutively in time with Obama's presidency, because I just realized that residency as president could just be presidency.
Although I do have Capcom's new game sorted out, Resident President.
Yes. No, President Evil.
But to teach future generations about what happens when Donald Trump comes to power.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, no, the Dobermans with Donald's face. Right, so anyway, rather than dealing consecutively in time with Obama's presidency, what it does, it focuses on particular issues that were close to Barack Obama or to Michelle Obama or to the Democratic Party in general. And one of the ones, obviously, is going to be the healthcare thing. Obama wanted to introduce the healthcare system and give people on much lower incomes a ready alternative to the crippling, the absolutely crippling healthcare costs in America. And I honestly cannot believe that the government would actually consider having that same system in the UK to replace the NHS. But that's one of the ideas that was put forward. having an American-style health system. Because when you look at the American health system, I'm not going to go into the murky politics of it, but it was touched on in a movie years ago that had Warren Beatty in. It was a movie called Bullworth, and he played the role of a senator called Bullworth who was going to run for presidency and then went off the rails and ended up living in the ghetto with a African-American family. And he'd basically just gone totally off radar. And he started rapping on TV and started rapping about how health insurance was killing America. And, you know, the American political system was in the control of the insurance companies, in particular health insurance. And you cannot find that movie on YouTube or anywhere else. Because you know how you can find loads of old movies on YouTube and things like that? Every time Bullworth gets uploaded to YouTube, it gets pulled. Coincidence? But we're not going to go into that. Anyway, right. So Inside Obama's White House, it focused on Obamacare as it came to be known, but Obama was trying to do something, and the Democratic Party was trying to do something really different and actually partially fix, if not fix, the healthcare system in America, because you had thousands of people dying every year because they simply couldn't afford healthcare. They didn't have the money to afford health insurance, so they couldn't actually get medication. They couldn't actually get treated for anything like that. When you think about it, you think, hang on, in a democratic society, with duly elected officials who are supposed to be looking after the people, how can that then happen?
Yeah, I mean, I know that's the thing I've always found just mind-boggling about America.
Yeah.
Is that there are people who can't afford to go to hospital.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that can ever be something people thought was okay.
And this is the thing. The Americans actually believe that that is okay, that it's okay for the world to be like that. And the reason they believe that it's okay for the world to be like that is because if you suggest any alternative, they see it as government infringement into their personal freedom. And you're like, well, no, it's not. It's basically just healthcare. We're making sure that you actually if you have an accident, you're not going to die. But they won't listen to that because automatically it must be a communist plot. It must be a socialist plot. Effectively, the American people have been brainwashed through decades of coaching and cajoling through TV and other forms of media into believing certain things, and that's why Donald Trump has such a hold now. And the weird thing was, Inside Obama's White House actually highlighted just some of the kind of things, the really weird things that American people believe simply because somebody tells them to. I mean, this whole thing with the Tea Party, for example, which was formed on the basis of defying Obamacare. That was the whole purpose for the Tea Party coming into existence in the first place, was for one reason, stop Obamacare. They basically put the wind right up the Republican Party, right up the Republican Party, and then all of a sudden, it was like we had with UKIP in this country, of the immigration thing, until people started and the media started actually making it clear when they're talking about immigration, they're talking about European immigration. They're not talking about immigration from around the world.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that. I mean, the Republicans also did that whole thing. The Republicans kind of scored an own goal. It was a spectacular own goal. And I'd totally forgotten that this had happened because it was only mentioned like in a 30-second news piece in the UK. There was a woman and she was at university, or college as they call it. And she challenged the government and she challenged the Republican Party in particular because the Catholic Church wanted to kind of opt out of the whole healthcare system because Obama was saying, you know, contraceptives have to be available in Catholic hospitals and you have to, you know, you have to give women the choice of whether they want to have an abortion or not. That's the law. Doesn't matter who you are. And they had the idea that they were going to be exempt from the whole thing with the healthcare thing. And it turned out they weren't. Because this woman had come forward and said, well, you know, I've been denied contraception, denied this, denied that. Just because I'm a woman, you know, doesn't matter that I'm an upstanding citizen. I have done nothing wrong in my life or anything like that. I demand these things. These things are my right as a citizen of the United States. And she basically challenged the government. And Obama immediately went, I'm on your side. And the Republicans basically scored an own goal by trying to claim that she was wasting her college years sleeping around and getting pregnant.
Ooh, no Republicans.
Yeah. And that basically sent millions of women across America right over the edge.
God, I feel like there's probably one instance when us and 1 million mums were probably on the same side or something.
Yeah, probably. But that was one of the great things about this series was that it highlighted the high moments and the low moments. You know, it didn't really pull any punches, and you got to see a different side of Obama throughout the series, a side of Obama that really the public rarely get to see. And it's fascinating, just this look into the mind of a man who pretty much clawed his way to the top, when you think about it. Because there's no real reason why Obama should have won that first election. Given how George W. Bush won twice, first time was by violating the Constitution, and the second time was basically because they were in the middle of the Iraq War. Given that they can actually fix the system and rig the system that much, Obama should never have won, should he?
Politics.
Yeah, I know. All I'm saying is, you know, it's interesting because every time he tries to fix something, and this was also highlighted in the series, every time he tries to do something positive, do something to change, do something to make things better for America and the American people, it just seems like the Republican Party are going, no, it's my toy, you can't have it.
I think his problem was assuming that America's going to be smart enough to say, oh yes, this is a thing that's good for us, let's vote for it.
That is exactly it. And again, that's actually something that comes... He actually says that on quite a few occasions because it's got interviews with various members of his staff from the White House. And all of them have pretty much said the same thing at one time or another during the course of the series, was that Obama was always surprised at just how much the American people resisted any efforts to make their lives better.
They don't deserve Obama.
No, they don't.
It deserves some... I think Donald Trump should win the election. He is the president America deserves.
No. Do you know what I think they should do? I think that after Obama's presidency, right, what happens is he basically changes nationality, comes over to England.
Yes, let him be prime minister instead.
Yes, and we have Obama as prime minister of England, because I'd be down with that.
But nobody likes the prime minister of England, no matter who he is.
If it was Obama, I'd be fine with that. And he may actually be able to get stuff done here.
Exactly.
Because I'm sure if he puts forward a proposal, Parliament isn't automatically going to say, nope, we're not going to do any work, we're going to stop the entire country. Because where to go, Republicans? They basically stopped America. You know, they stopped the government from functioning at all. And Obama just went, hey, it's not my fault. I just put this proposal forward. They're the ones doing this, American people. You know who to blame. I don't know if you guys remember that. It was all over the news. The American government system stopped.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Obama basically went, nothing to do with me. I just put this forward for them to talk about. They're the ones who stopped the system. American people, who are you going to blame? And the American people en masse blame the Republicans.
Because it's their fault.
Yes. Anyway, that's what I've been watching.
Good stuff. Andy, what about you?
It isn't going to be as long as how long you were talking.
Sorry.
But
but it's politics, and you know the better than to let me talk like that.
When I've been watching, I mean, I watched one episode of it since it started. I think it's three on now. I've been watching this week Bake Off Creme de la Creme.
Okay.
Well, week before, but the premise is still the same. It's a professional-based, but when you first start watching it, you think, oh, it's going to be the Bake Off. But it's professional bake-off.
It's not.
No, it's as cruel as you can get.
I've watched this.
It's more of overall, it's like you get a win at the end of the series.
Yeah.
There's heats and a semi-final. Yeah. And it was I've seen.
It's more kind of the MasterChef format where you have different groups each time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I really don't get why they didn't just call it like MasterChef Baking or something.
The first notable difference is Mary Berry's changed quite a bit.
Oh, God, yeah, she's split into three people.
And went French.
Yeah, into three people. One of them's English, one of them's French, and I swear the last one is Japanese.
Oh, my God. Is Mary Berry secretly, like, baking Captain Planet?
Yes.
The judges, anyway, the Benoit Blin, Claire...
Sorry, what was his name?
Benoit Blin.
He sounds like an American wrestler.
Claire Clark. And Cherish Finden.
I was going to say, alliteration is strong until then.
But the one I've seen, there was a group that eventually won it of Army.
Yeah.
Army-based.
Oh, I saw that one, yeah.
And the other they made this. They were making these brilliant showstoppers. They always have the showstopper still at the end. Yeah. And they were making this brilliant, I forgot exactly what it was, but it wouldn't.
Was this the big kind of musical letter type thing with the shelves and the cogs? And
They finally got it, but it was the other team. I mean, I thought they were much better. The other team was much better. But basically, they wouldn't mark it because it was a few inches different on the other side of the... It was something like, it was 0.5 inches different. And basically went, if it was 0.2 inches... It wouldn't bother me, but 0.5 inches, I'm not marking it.
We want precision. Do you not understand? Like, are you not entertained?
They've spake this. It was,
that doesn't sound like I'm entertained.
It was like a garden, wasn't it? It was like a garden of cakes and things like that. And they gave a terrible marks because it was a few inches shorter than... If it was on the proper bake-off...
If they called that the Garden of Cakely Delights...
But
they might
have
scored points.
Apparently it's Twitter into quite a row as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I've just thought, because basically Rob this morning was talking about a manga about a woman who's obsessed with puddings.
Yes.
I don't want to see her Garden of Cakely Delights.
That's just a euphemism. You know that. Anyway.
But yeah, the evil judges. It has I think it's improved viewing figures, though.
Yeah.
After that episode. And... I've enjoyed watching it. I'm going to catch up on it. But
They made one of the bakers cry in the
episode. Yeah, it was the same episode. It was because of that comment.
Yeah. Because wasn't she Japanese as well or something?
I think so.
Yeah. And they made her cry. And everyone's going, they made her cry? My God, they're really cruel.
This actually sounds like the anti-bake-off.
It is the anti-bake-off.
That's the best word to call it.
I've kind of got to agree with Andy on this. One of the things that I found interesting about Creme de la Creme is that all of the things that make Bake Off so eminently watchable are non-existent in Creme de la Creme.
Mm. It's like, he said he wanted, was it 6 or 7 cakes? And they gave him 2, so he's not going to mark them.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
Well, see, that sounds a bit more understandable.
But that's... Yeah, but it's what he was expecting, not what they said they were going to make. It's like, it's just too strict. It's like you could be in best baker possible. And
So do you mean like he didn't say beforehand, like, I want you to make 6 or 7?
No, it was their own. I'm not entirely sure if they must get...
No, they get told at the beginning. They got told how many to make.
Ah.
So.
It just annoys me, but it's very intriguing to watch.
Basically, it's like, you know how in The Apprentice they can be really cruel and pull no punches? It's kind of like The Apprentice, but you got these three master patissiers who are... And I don't understand why they call it Bake Off Creme de la Creme, because everyone's just doing patisserie. Would it kill them to have somebody make a meat pie? I mean, seriously, where the hell are the mince pies? Where's the steak pasties and stuff like that? It's a baking competition. And yes, I know that they all want all their financier cakes and everything like that. But seriously, if you're going to call it Bake Off Creme de la Creme, where are the volumons? Where are all the dainty little eating things, the little tidbits that come on a silver platter, you know, held by an ancient man who's been a butler for like 7,000 years and just magically appears because he's mastered that skill... Yeah, of just magically appearing.
Yeah, but that...
I can just see it now. I'm sorry, Miss de la Fontaine III, French pastry chef extraordinaire, but your sausage roll was severely lacking.
Yes.
Joey from Greg's, you're going through to the next round.
Yes.
It's...
Well, it was kind of like that when the army guys won. It was pretty much like that. Because they beat these guys with like really strong French accents who were working in the kitchen of the Savoy Hotel. And they got beat by these guys who were in the army. So I like it for having that still. But I don't know. I couldn't get over the kind of casual snobbery of the judges.
I know, it's like, what do you want?
And of the contestants, though, the contestants are also slightly snobbish as well. Oh, yes, we're going to do this with this and this and this, and we're going to pipe this and do this and maybe make this into this, and sitting there going, I just want to eat cake. I don't need all the fancy bits, just give me cake.
It's going to get eaten anyway. It's got cake in it. But
should my show stop making just a bowl of cake mix?
Yeah. I mean, why not? I'm sorry, but... And I know this as the absolute truth. Doesn't matter how much money you have or how many titles you have, when you're in the privacy of your own home, all of that goes out the window and that massive tub of Ben and Jerry's comes out. And you're sitting there in these massive flannel pajamas with a massive dressing gown in front of the TV. Your hair is basically a mess and you're sitting there with a giant spoon and a giant tub of Ben and Jerry's and you're just shoving it all into your face.
Correction. Little spoon, because it takes longer to eat.
They use big spoons.
It's not as emotionally satisfying to shove a little spoon of ice cream into your mouth.
Yes, because the upper class really go to extremes when they do things like that.
I knew you were on about upper class when you were on about Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah.
Not Iceland zone. or hang on, unspecified supermarket zone ice cream.
Well, I was going to go with Haagen-Dazs and then I remembered how much I hate Haagen-Dazs.
Plus, Haagen-Dazs, that's too upper class.
That's the irony. It's not. It's not at all. It's just kind of Haagen-Dazs. Yeah, fine. Do I have to?
Certainly no Ben and Jerry's.
Yes, Colin, you're going to cover yourself in Haagen-Dazs.
What?
It's an old joke.
Well, then, that's...
Bake Off Creme de la Creme.
Yes.
Recommended watching. If you can catch up with it, catch up with it. It's something which is very... It's addictive to watch, and it's definitely different to the Bake Off.
Yeah, it's very, very different.
MasterChef Lite.
Bake Off Evil. Anyway, Andrew, finally.
So, as I mentioned earlier, I may as well talk a bit about Agent Carter Season 2.
Yes.
I think a while ago I talked about the first episode and I loved it. And now the series ended a few weeks ago now and I finally caught up on all of it. So I think the plot follows Agent Carter. She's in Los Angeles investigating a new element called Zero Matter.
Yeah.
Which actress slash mad scientist Whitney Frost wants to use to destroy the world.
Yes.
And while she's there, she meets up with all her old friends, like you've got Jarvis and Daniel Souza, and new potential love interest, Dr. Jason Wilkes.
Oh.
Who is a black man.
Oh.
Which I don't mean that like a general, oh, well, look, they've got black people. I mean, because obviously it's the 1950s. It's
and
about...
that's not the done thing then.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is interesting.
It is. But I have bad news.
Oh.
Oh, no.
It wasn't good.
Really?
Like, it had lots and lots of really good moments, but the pacing of the series was just all over the place.
Really?
Like, it feels like for about, like, 11 out of 13 episodes, they just dragged their feet. And then suddenly everything happened in, like, the blink of an eye.
Ouch.
Yeah. Like, they had all these plot lines, like, as eventually Jason Wilkes, he gets kind of hit by Zero Matter and becomes sort of like a ghost, like he doesn't technically exist. And that gets kind of just resolved. Then there's another thing where Peggy's old boss...
He doesn't become the Black Racer, does he?
No, he doesn't. No, he gets cured, and then it's all hunky-dory.
He gets cured from being a ghost.
Yeah, well, he's not like... he's intangible and can turn invisible.
Right, okay.
And they eventually fix that. And
I'm trying to figure out how you fix someone who's intangible and invisible.
And no, it gets sucked into a portal, and then he comes out, and then he explodes, and then he's better.
Okay. Good old Stan Lee science.
Sounds really.
And then there's another plot line where Peggy's old boss from the New York SSI, he starts getting more involved with the kind of secret council that Whitney Frost is part of. And it looks like, ooh, is he going to betray everyone? And then no, he doesn't.
Okay.
And it's just, it's a bunch of plot lines that feel like they don't go anywhere.
Hmm.
Like, it feels like they kind of, after they did Series 1, exploring all Peggy's backstory and stuff, they didn't really have that many ideas for Series 2.
But, I mean, it's set in, like, the 1950s. There's loads of things you could have done with it.
Yeah, but it seems like they didn't know what any of those ideas were.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, it was so disappointing.
I think it seems like that they rushed it because the first season was such a success.
See, no, I wouldn't even say it felt rushed. It just felt like they probably spent a long... Well, no, I guess rushed to an extent of, like, they spent a long time working up a potential plan for the first series before they made it.
Yeah.
And then the second series, basically someone said, okay, you have to make this now. And they hadn't really thought about what they wanted to do with it.
Okay.
But more that than rushed in the sense of them going, oh, God, quick, we have to write whatever we can. But I say that there are still, like, some fantastic moments.
Yeah.
Like, I think the part is we meet Jarvis's wife.
Really?
Yeah, and they are just lovely together.
Jarvis is married?
Yeah. Well, you've seen the first series.
Yeah, I've seen the... Oh, God, yeah.
He was there to get home to be with Mrs. Jarvis.
Yeah. He keeps mentioning that.
Let's be home by 7 so I can make dinner. And they can listen to the radio and go to bed.
Damn it. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But yeah, like...
But you actually get to meet her.
Yeah. And, like, basically she's... So the thing that they go into it in the first series a bit, that she's sort of an immigrant from Poland, I think.
Yeah.
And that Jarvis kind of threw away his entire military career to be with her.
Yeah.
And just they have this nice, really strong relationship. Like, I think one of the best lines she has, because he's been trying to, like, keep the stuff he does with Agent Carter a secret from her.
Yeah.
And she says, I fully support what you do, but that doesn't mean I don't worry about you.
That sounds a bit like Hawkeye from Age of Ultron.
Yeah, it is very much like Hawkeye from it, that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
Only without the world's greatest archer bit.
Yeah. Jarvis, the world's greatest archer, just doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
No. Well, the things that do roll off the tongue. At one point, Jarvis gets hit with a tranquilizer dart, and he goes, but Mr. Jarvis, how are you? And he just goes, Jarvelous!
Oh, I like that. So is it still watchable, though, at the very least?
Oh, yeah, it's still watchable. It's just inherently disappointing.
Would you tune into a third season after watching it?
Oh, no, I'd definitely like going for a third season hoping it's better. It's just, I expect better. I'm not mad, Agent Carter. I'm just disappointed.
Yes, you heard it straight from Kevin Sorbo's mouth. So, yeah. We are then at the end of the show, so we're going to love you and leave you for another week. Just a reminder, the Geek Show Podcast Network is a voluntary organization, so please show your support by sharing or making a donation to our new GoFundMe campaign, which is trying to raise money so that we can replace equipment and keep making all of the wonderful content that we're making. So if you can, share the campaign or make a donation, you know, whatever you can do will be really appreciated. All of our shows are available on Mixcloud and soon, very, very, very soon, iTunes, Stitcher, and also YouTube's as well. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, MyAnimeList, and various other places on the internet. So, yeah, that's all of that done. I have been Rob.
I've been someone who's just realized that we never actually said that I'm Andrew on the show.
No, he's been ill.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I've been ill.
Oh, no, he's been ill. He's been ill.
And I don't think at any point we actually said
what
my actual name is.
No, he has been ill, or Andrew, in equal measure.
And I've been Andy.
We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.